Ben in. Ben had it knocked away. A pass for Robertson. Brought to center. Robertson over the line, dropping it back. Another shot. He got it!
It's been ups and downs for sure. I mean, to get sent down, given cap space and everything, and the situation was definitely tough to grasp. Like I said, that was tough. But now to get a night like this is just kind of makes up for it. And again, I don't want to just have a night. You know, I want to be consistent. I want to play well and help the team.
Stars were out last night, and none bigger. And your boy, Nick Robertson, in his season debut in the the big league was Nick Robertson. Man, they needed that win more than anything. Anything.
They might need Nick Robertson more than anything.
Oh, we're never want to see that guy ride an AHL bus again.
No, and, well, I don't know. There are other things that are going to be involved, obviously. But I don't think he will. I think he's too important. I think he was probably too important even to start. I wonder what Zach Aston-Reese is doing with that extra $47,000.
Man.
That squeezed him out of positioning. But it's Dennis Malgin's going to be hanging out upstairs for a little while because Nick Robertson is clearly the superior option. It's too bad that he had to wait. Maybe it kept that fire burning for him. And
look like it.
He was really the only one who had that extra little bit of juice. Like, he was far and away the Maple Leafs best player. He had
maybe the best player on the ice.
He might have been. He outshining the brother even.
That's right.
But that's what they needed. Like, they were dragging their feet again, and Nick Robertson dragged them into the fight.
It's a Nick Robertson game. You mentioned Dennis Malgin. More like Dennis Malgon.
Beautiful.
Oh, come on. I'm thinking about that one all night.
I feel like there's only one option back there. It's booing.
Yeah, I've never heard the boom boom.
Never applause.
Not even the precious that you would be. All right. See, you did that for me. Nick Robertson's show. The guy looked great, dominant on both ends of the ice. Like, the defensive play and the overtime goal alone, you could start there. Like, I'm standing there.
Bit of a gamble.
I'm standing there watching a 2-on-1 with Nicky Robertson skating backwards, thinking, I have literally no idea how. Like, is this guy, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And he finds a way to break up the play. He's explosive. Like, I thought his speed was incredible last night. Like, this guy has put work in. He looks stronger. He looks so much faster. His response time to, like, grab the puck, break up the play in overtime, shoot up the ice. His shot is immaculate. Like, as Austin Matthews has said, it just, that 30-second clip, whew, that guy's an NHL player.
Yeah, 100%. And it's been a tough week for Sheldon Keefe for obvious reasons.
Wait, what happened?
And he went back yesterday. We can get into that if we have to. But for now, I will give him credit for
putting Robertson out in OT.
I won't even say, like, do you deserve credit for that? It's like, yeah, obvious thing. If you watch that game, you're like, who do you want to see in overtime? I probably want to see a couple minutes from number 89.
Yeah,
but
hope so.
He had him out there with Austin Matthews in a big moment. Again, it could have went a little bit of a gamble on that Jamie Benn rush, but he makes the play. He moves up ice, as you mentioned, and he finishes it off in overtime. And really, that was the perfect, I don't want to say that was the only, that wasn't even the perfect, because it would have been great if Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner went off and shut everybody up, and that would have been all great. But in terms of, like, it seemed like they needed something.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had to provide something to just, like, try to just send some positive energy into what is this, like, inferno that seems to be building underneath. And the newcomer provided that. The guy who has been disassociated from this, like, inferno.
He was slighted. By the cap.
He's not the one that's in any position to, you know, feel like you are greater than because you have been humbled. And the humbled guy comes in, and he's the difference in the game. I feel like that is, you know, that may be a good story, better story for the fans than what they actually have in the room, but they needed something. Mm-hmm. They needed a shot in the arm, and Nick Robertson coming up playing his first game provided that in more ways than one.
I would think that was the perfect storyline for me. The two brothers, the guy getting his first call up, he just won the hearts of Leafs Nation. Like, I think people, myself included, I remember doing the what do we need to see? How do we word that segment that one time? Whatever. We are all talking about burning questions for the Maple Leafs going into this year. And one of mine was, what is Nick Robertson? Who is Nick Robertson? Is this Nick Robertson time? And I said, this better be Nick Robertson time. Like, I'm in the camp of waiting around for this young prospect who you've touted throughout the AHL. He got a little glimpse at the NHL here and there, but it was time for him to put the work in the offseason and come out strong. And that is exactly what we saw last night. I know it's a one-game sample, but, man, you made an impression that Leafs Nation loves you. You're the Michael Bunting of this year right now. You just got to keep that rolling. And he was so positive and, like, humble. I know we played that clip off the top, but this guy grinded all offseason, knowing that there was pressure on him, knowing there was huge expectations, which seemed to get bigger every year. And, you know, he had a bit of a rough go. And you come out with an effort like that, and you get points. Like, he could have just played strong, and he did. But the fact that he is on the score sheet twice, game-winning goal in overtime, it's perfect. Like, I couldn't be happy for the kid.
There was a perception, too, that he had hit a wall from a developmental perspective.
What's going to happen if he doesn't make it this year? You're going to move off him. Like,
you're going to move off him. He was maybe the guy that was going to be moved out in a potential trade to fix whatever. Like, instead of being the bait that gets you someone to play on the second line, he might be the second line guy. So he's crashed through that wall that we might have put in front of him erroneously.
Yeah.
He's emerged from the Matthew Nyes shadow and to a certain degree. Like, we're all clamoring for Matthew, like, oh, so upset that Matthew Nyes didn't leave college to play for the Maple Leafs in the postseason. Like, that was going to be the difference. The difference might be Nick Robertson. He's the newcomer. He's the guy who can inject something new. And he was the tonic last night, 100%. He fixed what had been ailing the Maple Leafs in the short term. Now let's see if he can do it for the long term on that second line. But, like, there was, I don't know what the concerns were in terms of putting him there right away. Are you going to have good enough of a defensive line? Are you going to have enough physicality on that second line? Are you going to have this and that? Well, he provided exactly what Tavares and Nylander needed, which is just a talented guy.
Yep.
Someone who can do something. Someone who can provide more than replacement level contributions, which is what they've had with Malgin and Galchenyuk and literally everyone before. If he can be that guy who can actually make a difference, then the Leafs have something. And oh yeah, guess what? Tavares and Nylander have been the best two forwards all year long. So
I thought that he looked
maybe we have to stop worrying about the second line if you have Nick Roberts in there.
I thought he looked really great with Willie. Like, they haven't played together. Keep that in mind. Willie and Tavares have played together. They should be able to have this chemistry that sometimes is questioned. Willie was feeding Nicky. Nicky was finding Willie. Like, they looked in tandem already game one of playing together. I know there's been some practices, but I would not be thinking about splitting that duo up, to say the least. That first period, though, I obviously am at the game, and I'm thinking, first of all, energy was in the basement. Snooze fest once again.
Which is becoming a pattern.
They come out and so uninspired. And I'm thinking, oh my God, tomorrow morning, Justin and I are doing...
Yeah, we're sulking again.
And we're doing the what needs to change. Is it time to get rid of Sheldon Keefe? Like, honestly, I was thinking, how are we starting the show tomorrow? It's going to be a miserable conversation in Toronto. Everyone's going to be thinking, like, this isn't a team. He's lost the room. And there's still questions. Like, I'm not saying that that's all gone, especially because some of his comments again yesterday, but you can't be starting games like that. Like, they did not play a full 60 minutes. When's the last time they played a full 60 minutes, Justin? Not this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple good games in that Tampa Bay series, but, like, this year, no.
How were you not able to put 60 minutes of hockey yesterday when it was all eyes on the Toronto Maple Leafs? Like, it was the game you needed to come out and shut people up and put up. And they didn't do that until they got a little bit hairy.
Six shots in the first period.
Oh, my God. Six shots in the first period. Austin Matthews should be getting six shots in the first period.
Yeah, especially with the week that they've had.
Exactly.
Like, you would expect that there would be a little bit more urgency from those top two guys. I'll call them the elite of the elites because it's been the talk of the elite players. And there are four elite players, we'll call them, on the Maple Leafs. But there are two that are more elite. And that's Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. And still, despite the win, and despite Austin Matthews having a role in the winner, I mean, we're still left waiting or missing something. we're still wanting more, 100%. Auston Matthews hasn't shot the puck in the net yet this season through five games, and Mitch Marner just isn't his, you know, isn't hitting even close to his potential, which is 110, 120 points, which is the most dynamic player on the ice at all times. We haven't seen that yet from these guys. And frankly, the lack of discipline from the Stars, the quick whistle or the generous whistle from the referees last night, Leafs had eight power plays.
Their power play is awful, Justin.
You had eight power plays. That means your guys, the elites and the elite of the elites, are out there in advantageous scenarios, like almost exclusively.
I'm going to find how many minutes that Auston Matthews played last night. Hold on, because I remember reading it being like, what?
Well, just because it was a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, they had almost 13 minutes on the power play. They went 1-for-8 on the power play. It's like, I don't know if a night like that, and we got Anthony Stewart on later. I want to know if that helps struggling superstars or doesn't.
26, almost 27 minutes.
Yeah.
Auston Matthews is on the ice.
And probably about 10 of that would have been on the power play. So you have 10 minutes of, again, it might not be quite 10 minutes, but you have ample time on the power play. You have all the time in the world, all the space in the world that you're not getting, I guess, in 5-on-5 scenarios because, well, frankly, you haven't been able to create it for yourself, but you've been shut down to this point. They're playing well against you. But you have all that time and still you can't quite get on track. So it's part of the problem. The power play at times looks great. At times looks awful.
It's so funny being
there.
And
it's hard to spin a 1-for-8 as a positive.
There isn't. It's funny when you're there because it's, shoot! Like, I forgot how annoying.
Okay, there's some merit to it.
Oh my God.
I want you to go on yours.
There is some merit to it.
The power play goal they scored was Rasmus Sandin putting a weak shot on net that gets kicked out to Alexander Kerfoot. Like, sometimes it is more simple. And again, you should not be reacting to what the crowd is saying and yelling and murmuring because that's ridiculous. But Sandin has been the preferred option before because he can just get a puck on the net. And when the puck gets on the net, a rebound happens, scrambles happen, that's when goals happen.
Okay, so I've played sometime in my life a little power play action, okay? And when you're in a slump like this, like you can say a slump, I know they got one goal, but it's not like one of the best parts about the Maple Leafs last year was their power play, right? Where is that this year? So sometimes you just need a dirty goal. Like you need to throw the puck on net and hit somebody's butt and land in the crease and smash it in. Like there's too much wanting finesse and like no urgency. Like Willie, I know he can control the puck, but like buddy, put it somewhere of relevance that you're not going to score from the top of the blue line in the corner. Like I just put some pucks on net. There was that play that I just, oh my God, the fans were going to jump the boards where there's 2 seconds left in the period. I think they're on the power play and Willie looks for the pass across the ice. And I think he threw it over to Tavares, who was just like, what are we doing here? And instead of putting the puck on net and everybody at that point, shoot, like they're helping him, right? Like he should know there's 2 seconds left in the period. He throws the puck across the ice and you know nobody gets a shot on that, but like there should be a little more urgency, especially when your power play isn't performing. You need to get a goal, you're trailing or the game's tied. Like just put the puck on net, get the bounce you need. There's going to be a good hockey bounce here and there, and then you'll feel a little bit more confident. But just too much pretty play.
Yeah, they seem to be focused on puck movement rather than player movement, and I find when the Leafs' power play looks at its best, and I'm watching the Edmonton Oilers, or was a second ago, on the power play. They are constantly moving. Mm-hmm. Like, McDavid is not a standstill. He's
what it's like to play against that, too. You're honestly, like, you're almost confused. You're distracted. You're tiring them out. Like, why are we stagnant?
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to play against.
If you're moving, it makes it that much more difficult, but it gives you a leg up when those scrambles happen because the defense is literally at a standstill most of the time, or at least trying to reacting to what the players are doing. And when you create those scrambles and you're already moving, you can get to that puck faster. So I think I think a simplified approach is clearly needed, but also less puck movement, more player movement, I think, would be a step in the right direction. But again,
small things.
You can talk about this. I'm not a power play strategist, But it just seems obvious sometimes that a simplified approach and less, hey, we're just going to try to beat you with passing. It just feels like you're running into a wall over and over again if that's the main strategy.
Quick text in here from Leanne. Did you hear the Marner stat last night? He had his third penalty of the season. Last year, he didn't have three until February.
And he was fired up about the call. It couldn't have been more obvious. It was clearly a penalty.
Yeah.
And he's barking at the refs. Like, he's in his feelings right now.
He's in his feelings for many ways.
We're not making this up. It's clearly he's frustrated. And, you know, some of that frustration might be a little bit misplaced. We think, we believe, we argue. But that group, like, this thing is wound tight. Have you ever seen Kyle Dubas? Did you see the Kyle Dubas gif?
Okay, so I'm not seeing Kyle Dubas live on the broadcast there, but I check my phone or I go down to the media, whatever room in between periods sometimes, and those Kyle Dubas clips.
Have you ever seen him react like that?
Those are going to be forever.
I've never seen that.
I've never seen him.
Grandma Doobie must be a little upset this morning.
He said some foul language.
Really foul. Like, you don't need lip, like an expert on lip reading.
He was rattled. Okay, so the one that I saw was while they were doing the goal review, which took a long time. Once again, I think the correct call was made, unfortunately.
The change?
Yes.
I didn't think they were going to change it, but I think it should have been a goal.
It should have been a goal.
And quickly, just
unfortunately.
Why I think it should be a goal is, like, Sagan's entitled to his space.
Yeah.
He didn't go into the crease. And I know that's not the rule, but that's how I think the rule should be. Like, he's entitled to go to that area that he went to. Samsonov's out of control. Whatever.
Let me just quick boost here. Did I not say that Tyler Seguin was going to score a goal last night?
You did.
Did I not say that Nick Robertson was going to score a goal last night?
You're flush with cash.
I not parlay those into a same game parlay? And
did it win?
Oh, it won. There's your just $5, everybody.
I didn't know that just $5 were same game parlay.
Well, sometimes you just, materials. You know, sometimes I'm there and I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna forgot to do this. I did have one with the two Robertson brothers scoring, but man, Nicky.
It's the Nick night.
Jason's probably like feeling like tail between his legs after the game.
Spending too much time with Friege the night before, you hear that?
Okay, I saw that
hanging
on
TV.
Friege and Merrick filming their 32 Thoughts podcast. Free just like lounging, like he's like in bed. Did you see the video? It's so funny.
No, I was kind of like, I was doing,
you gotta
I don't
watch
know
what
this. I was doing. I was listening, but I wasn't watching.
It's really good. Like, they got the cameras on the guys, and I think Elliot must be 10 degrees from the horizontal. Like, it's so good. Oh, he looks real relaxed.
Literally chilling with Nick Robertson.
It was so
the night
good
before the game.
Man, it was good.
I want to get to that point of my, like, you know, Friege is high
bar, buddy.
But I want to be in a situation where I'm like, I'm straight up here. Like, we got the guys come in for the JD Bunkus podcast. The seat is on the floor. And I'm like, how can you be that comfortable on the air with the seat on the floor?
Elliot,
but I
what
guess
a guy.
If you're
one day we'll be pros.
If you're
like
JD's co hosts or Elliot Friedman, you're at that level.
Okay, so running through with the pros, obviously the Nick Robertson era begins. I don't feel like we're moving on from that anytime soon. But that bottom six, that fourth line, Justin, you jinxed these kids.
No, I didn't.
Best line in hockey, the best.
Your words, not mine.
You were like jazzed up about these three. What is their importance? What is their impact? Like, what have they done?
Okay, they're getting demolished right now.
It's
but they're
rough.
They're somewhat miscast. I don't want to defend Zach Aston-Reese and Nick Obey-Kubel because individually they have brought nothing to the table. Nothing. We talked about the juice that's lacking. Like, it's not on them to provide it more often than not. Mm-hmm. But hey, a shift or two here and there where you show that you have something, whether it's speed, physicality, a little creativity, like, we're seeing the Zach Aston-Reese conundrum play out in real time because this guy consistently has awesome defensive numbers, but no one wants him. No team was willing to give him a contract before Kyle Dubas steps up and is
definitely
like, wow,
least,
I've seen that Corsi 4% before and I want to put it on my team. Like, honestly, he is the eye test versus analytics guy because he does nothing. And yet you look at the numbers, except for this season, and they've been really, really positive. But So they've got a difficult task. They're going up against top lines. They are getting demolished by these top lines.
But that wasn't a problem last year. That line of, was it Camp, Kasha, and Mikheyev? They were tasked with that job last year. I know they're a different crew.
Well, they got...
So maybe this isn't the right personnel to have that same role that those guys had last year.
And they're doing an okay job, but I think Camp is doing an okay job. Camp is the guy who has to shoulder this responsibility. The other guys are just out there, and they're kind of like dealing with what they can deal with, but they're not... They're getting owned. They're like 13% offensive zone start. So they're always out there starting on the wrong spot against top competition. The numbers are going to be pretty bad, but you accept that if you can limit the damage against good lines. However, I think these guys, the wingers, aren't giving enough. And I feel like for that reason, you have to put Camp, this four line thing might not work. You might have to put Camp with better players, guys he's actually had success with before, Kerfoot, Engvall, whoever, in order to get the best shutdown option, because you're not wasting those minutes per se because you're getting mostly a wash, but they are getting absolutely run over.
But you can't just get a wash. Like,
you can if you're the fourth line and playing against a top six line.
Okay, but I'm watching that 100%. First period. And that's when a fourth line needs an identity that is going to bring some energy. Like I've been a fourth line grinder. You are not going out to rip a goal. You're going out there to bring some energy to your team.
Yeah.
They don't even do that, Justin.
The Leafs are looking at this differently. They don't want a fourth line that goes out there crash and bangs.
You don't have to crash and bang.
But the traditionally what the fourth line is, you're laying it out perfectly. But they want more from their fourth line. They want to put their fourth line out there against top lines and hopefully shut them down. And Camp has done that. Mm. However, the guys he's playing with can't provide anything to really assist. And it feels like you're not getting the best version of David Camp because his line mates aren't on his level, at least from a shutdown perspective. They don't do anything. They're just out there kind of doing their best against better lines. And right now, I just feel like it's not, their experiment here isn't quite working as they thought and as I thought coming in. Because if that line could look good, flip the ice, start in the defensive zone, end up in the offensive zone, if that stuff happened with regularity, you'd love it, but it's not happening right now.
Tell me one thing that Pierre Engvall has done.
He's been brutal. He's been arguably the least worst forward. And that's after the Obey Kubel Zach Aston-Reese conversation. Like,
why not take him out of the lineup and put Wayne Simmons in on Saturday? Completely different players, but Wayne Simmons can go do something, like can rough somebody up. He's probably playing for something. I just have not seen one single reason to keep Pierre Engvall in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, penalty killing, not rocking the boat. Like there's little things. Like is what you're trying really hard. I know, but like Wayne Simmons will try hard, but won't get much done. Like honestly. But last night
there was a couple incidences where Wayne Simmons could have had an impact. Gio getting crushed in the boards. Yeah, everyone stood there.
Yeah. But then you get Wayne Simmons jumping on the ice and nothing happening, him yelling at someone, him taking a penalty and nothing else really coming productive from it. Like I'm all for a fourth line that is a handful, a load, crashes and bangs. I wish they had that, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think inserting Wayne Simmons in the lineup is going to be all that productive. And they've played, you know, Winnipeg and Toronto have had that history of it gets a little nasty. Remember Jason Spezza feels the need to step up and knee Neil Pionk in the head?
Oh, yeah.
Last year.
It's good.
Like it gets testy and you might want Wayne Simmons on your side for that game specifically, but like they always lose in those scenarios. It always favors the opposition when it gets to that point because the Leafs as a whole are uncomfortable with all of that. Wayne Simmons can make them more comfortable, at least have someone who can volunteer themselves for a little bit of nastiness. But I don't know if it really helps you win a hockey game.
I'm just saying it's worth the look on this road trip. Bring the guy, put him in.
You're throwing him a bone. I see the throw him a bone thing. Hey, make something happen. You should get his best effort because he's desperate to have, like, go out on his terms at least or have one more game. It's probably the time because there are candidates lower in the lineup who aren't doing their job.
It's now or never, in my opinion.
You have the flexibility.
Or like, he's going to go rot in the AHL and retire.
Yeah, he's never going to ride a bus. He's not going to play. And that obviously sucks, but I don't think he can really help the team when we're talking about the most meaningful moments. Maybe he can help them out on Saturday night. Are you taking out Engvall? And that's a statement, too. That's a worthy statement.
Engvall, as
but,
I said.
I mean, Keith might be tiptoeing around everybody now.
Stop tiptoeing and do the right thing.
Well, he clearly feels the need that he has to tiptoe, which is ridiculous, obviously.
Should we give that a little, like, 2 minutes of conversation?
I'm always down. Okay. You want to turn the page on this, but I do, I'll talk about this.
You know what?
Day.
It's Friday. I don't want to talk about this anymore after this conversation, and maybe with Stewie, because I think he'd have good perspective. We got Anthony Stewart on at 8. All right. After we thought that we had wrapped this little conversation up in a bow, the whole Keefe from Monday, it is now Friday, and it is lingering. And I know that we are the ones currently speaking about it on the radio. But what he said yesterday, doubling down on his remarks, I'm sure everybody knows the background story of this, so I'm not going to go into it. But let's just play the clip that he threw out to the media yesterday and the strays that we took.
It's probably more a reflection of coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs and dealing with you all than anything, just to make sure that the way that I'm communicating is more clear, because the reaction to the comments was not what I was trying to communicate. So it's more so about managing the media than it is about managing the players.
Important reminder that the media had, aside from like a quick follow-up with Mitch Marner on Wednesday, that was it. That's all it had to be. It was going to be that quick.
He's the one that keeps bringing it up.
He keeps bringing it up. The media was pretty much done with this story. And all Mitch Marner had to say was, we need to be better. If he said, we need to be better.
Let's turn the page and have a great game on Thursday.
We're looking forward to Thursday because we got things in our game that we're feeling confident about. And I think that's going to show itself on Thursday. If Mitch Marner said that story, his comment about elite players is gone. Instead, we have a week-long saga here because he keeps bringing it up and because Mitch Marner has zero semblance of a poker face. That's the reason why this is kept talking about. And for him to blame the media, it's such a cop-out because it was never about the media. It was about his elite players, and that you can't misconstrue it at all. It was about his elite players. He called out his elite players, and he wanted to walk it back because his elite players found issue with the call-out. And the media, doing its job, tells the story of
the team.
That's
why you're employed. That's why we have a job, to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like,
media is allowed in the room to be the traverse between team and fan base. They are telling the story of the team. And for that to be not a story, well, it wouldn't have been a story if you didn't make it a story. It's such a cop-out, just grasping for straws. And I like Sheldon Keefe a lot. I think he's a really good coach. That feeling might not be shared with certain members of the team. I don't really know. I think he's better than he's given credit for. But in this scenario, he is just continuing to stub his own toe because he's just grasping for it. He's trying to find something to latch onto, and instead, all you had to do was stop talking.
I think that's it for that conversation.
It's positive. It's Friday.
But I hope it's not an indication of something bigger with this team. That's all. Like, this has been a weird week.
Well, it's definitely
a weird insight.
It's definitely
into
an indication of something bigger. Well, there's something going on.
And so if they hadn't won last night's game and they had gone the way that the first period had gone, I don't think it's off the table that we'd had that conversation about Sheldon Keefe's future. So that yesterday felt like it was you wrote this in here.
Season or job saving victory, question mark?
I don't know
if we're there yet, but like, let's say it was a repeat of last year. I don't know what the exact stats were. Probably should have got that. But in terms of where they started, a couple weeks in, desperate for a win, one thing turned it around, which was that victory in Chicago against such an inferior opponent. Like, that's all you needed from a confidence-boosting perspective is to beat Chicago? Well, this is a good Dallas team. Maybe that's what gives you the confidence and has you turn things around here. But it seems like it's such a fine line. It's that one thing can get you right. So maybe this Nick Robertson performance, a Leaf victory, gets you right. but I don't think we're there yet. Like, they have to string together wins now for them to put this first chapter of the season, which has been largely a negative one, completely behind them. But I don't think they could do what they did last year and survive it the same way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't feel like you can write the same story. It feels like it would either linger or there would be consequences. So if they did nip it in the bud, maybe they'll be okay.
We got some texts here, 590, 590. You'd love to hear everybody's thoughts on a Friday morning. Slayer from North Haverbrook. Whew, buddy. With all due respect, I don't see where Keith brought it up again there. It seems as though he was asked about it again by the media, and that was his response.
He probably was asked,
I think,
but he brought a new layer to the story.
He pushed it right back on the media.
Yeah, he could have just said, oh, you know, we're good. We're going to move on. Like, we're on to tonight. That's why Bill Belichick, he gets made fun of.
But he's just
when
like,
he says he's on to Cincinnati,
we're done.
Or whatever he's on to, it's because we're not talking about it anymore. Of course the media's got to ask. It's their job to tell the story, and that was the main story for this team heading into this game. It would have just been one softball, deny that softball, and move on. Instead, Sheldon Keefe added an extra layer to it.
Eugene from Woodbridge. So it's the media's fault that Sheldon said what he did? Why can't we call out what needs to be said? P.S. Let's send Robertson back down to the Marlies. Ha ha. Oh, I don't like the end of that text.
No, I don't even get the first part of the text.
I think he's like saying, oh, so it's like, you know, the media's fault? Like, I think he's agreeing with us. Okay. I hope. I don't know. I can tell. Darren from Orangeville. Sheldon Keefe thinks his elite players work 60% of the time, every time. But when he gets in front of the camera, he feels like he's in a glass case of emotion.
He's an emotional guy. But again, that key, his attitude, Dubas freaking out to a certain, like, mm-hmm. within his, you know, in relative terms for him, like, that's about as emotional as we've seen him. Like, again,
between him and Dubas this week, we've seen a lot of emotion.
It is wound tight. It is wound really,
they got to go
really
on this road
tight.
Trip and get some sun on their faces. They're going to the West Coast.
Yes. Maybe Vegas at the right time.
Man, yeah, hitting up Vegas, hitting up San Jose, L.A., get a little R&R in there. Robertson had a single good game, and both radio stations in Toronto are calling him to give him a statue. Toronto media at his finest. Can't wait till tomorrow.
We're not giving him a statue. We're giving him credit for what was a great performance.
I said,
if you want to see him play in the American Hockey League, then so be it. Watch Dennis Malgin every night. If that's what you want, or do you want the better player? The better player is clearly Nick Robertson.
Adam and Guelph. Morning, guys. Couldn't help myself but wonder what would happen if Ben decided to snap on someone last night. Couldn't pick out one player who would answer the bell. Adam and Guelph.
It's true.
That's my argument for Wayne Simmons.
And it's a valid argument, but my counter is that you can't fake it. Wayne Simmons might go out there, yell at Jamie Benn, but it's not going to prevent the cross-check. It's not going to prevent...
No, I don't agree. I think if Wayne Simmons is in that lineup...
You don't think Ben takes that liberty?
I think he's worried about Wayne Simmons? They respect what Wayne Simmons can bring to this lineup.
I don't think Jamie Benn gives a damn.
Well, I don't think he cares either. But think about, like, there's like a little after the whistle hacking at Matthews. The Stars getting roughed up a little bit. Gio, I don't think that was an intentional hit, but Gio goes down like that. Everyone stood around. Like, that's a veteran on your team who is a leader, and everyone's like, oh, you know, he didn't mean to.
Oh, there's nothing. That's the most
leaf
thing ever.
Something happens. Get in someone's face.
And everyone gets really close and just kind of looks at each other. That's the most leaf thing ever. But again,
I know that he can't prevent those things from happening, Justin. He's not.
Okay, I'll bring something different. We talk about bullets all the time.
Mm-hmm.
How many bullets does Sheldon Keefe have? How many bullets does Wayne Simmons have in a game? Two things happen. He can only, he gets into a scrum and starts yelling and goes to the box. How many times do you do that a game?
That's enough.
And then Gio still gets run and Matthews still gets poked and prodded.
Why do you hate Wayne Simmons so much?
I'm just saying, my whole point is you can't fake.
You're soft.
You can't fake
You're
it.
You're scared.
You can't fake it.
He's not faking it. It's Wayne Simmons.
But the Leafs would be faking toughness by having him in the lineup because he can't contribute in any other way. It's the truth.
So your thought is that if you just put Wayne Simmons in by himself, that's not enough. You need like the Kyle Clifford line.
No. You need functional toughness. You need guys that can do both. You need players that can both stand up for themselves and play at an elite level. The Leafs,
that doesn't exist on the Maple Leafs, okay?
Yes, the Leafs don't have those players. And you could put Wayne Simmonds in, but you're conceding that you're playing with 11 forwards if you do that.
Stay tuned, because that could happen tomorrow night. Maple Leafs in Winnipeg. That's always got a little bit of grit to it.
We'll say, though, the way Zach Aston-Reese and Nikobe Kubel are playing, 11 forwards might not be all that
bad.
Yeah,
all right. The hyphen line's looking like the dash line, like the negative dash.
I got you.
You got that one. All right. Then Leafs in Vegas. Oh, Justin, you know what? Welcome to the morning show. We got two games next week that start at 10 p.m. or later.
I want to talk strategy with you on that.
Yeah, good luck. There is no strategy.
There's strategy.
Woof.
You want to know my strategy?
Yeah, you become nocturnal like a raccoon.
No. I'm going to go to bed real early. No, watch in the morning.
You've already lost the battle.
Why?
There's no difference between going to bed at, what, 8 and then missing it and then watching it at 4? No, you have to watch it at 3. You're going to get up at 3 a.m.
Go to bed at 8, wake up at 3 a.m., 7 hours.
Nah.
Skip through the commercials.
Okay, well, that's slight positive. Anyway, good luck next week. Get used to the grind. I don't even sleep anymore, so.
No.
All right, quickly before we get into the A-list. Raptors are hitting the road as well to play the drama-filled Brooklyn Nets. Appears Chris Boucher and Kem Birch could be making a return earliest tonight in Brooklyn. We know we talked a lot about Christian Coloco's debut, which was promising. I thought a lot of people were impressed with the young guy. But if Boucher and Birch come back in, we could see less of him. What the rotation might look like would kind of be the biggest intrigue into tonight. But also, like, the Brooklyn Nets got smashed against New Orleans. Like, it was a rough go. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of question marks around that team. Like, the personalities alone, just meshing is tough to say the least. So what to expect from tonight's game? I think the Raptors are in a really good spot to come out here tonight and build on what they did on their home opener.
I tend to agree with you. I think not one-dimensional teams, because there's clearly three decent dimensions with the Brooklyn Nets. But a team that's not deep, they should be able to take advantage of, win those minutes that are, you know, beneath, and those matchups that are beneath the Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons factor. I feel like their depth should help them, and getting Boucher and Kem Birch back should help them. But I worry maybe you give up a little bit too many Coloco minutes. I kind of want to see the Coloco motive in action. I want to see more of that. And I feel like if Kem Birch is there, we're going to have that conversation.
We might not actually see him at all, honestly.
These Birch minutes, I kind of want to see those Coloco minutes instead. But I think Boucher, clearly you want him involved. He's a big part of what they're going to bring from a bench and versatility and depth on the depth front. So having him back would be obviously a good thing. But I want to see them take advantage of a team that's still trying to figure it out, that is so top-heavy, mm-hmm. that might be a easier puzzle to figure out than most, because you know what you're going to get. It's either going to be KD or Kyrie or Ben, I guess. And, you know, him getting back into actually playing basketball but playing for a different team, I think there should be a bit of a learning curve there, and it's on the Raptors to take advantage of it.
Raptors have a pretty intense opening season schedule.
Back to back, Miami Saturday.
Yeah, so they got Brooklyn tonight, then they go Miami right after that. Obviously, there's a intrigue with some former players on that team. Back to back Miami, then back to back Philly, or not back to back, but two nights of Philly in a row.
Early season litmus test.
And you know what I was thinking about this is the Raptors have the upper hand in the first week or two of play because they have that continuity. And I think
good word.
Grange brought that up, maybe. I don't know where that, I pulled that word out of the thesaurus. But continuity is going to be really important for the Raptors getting ahead of the game right now. And maybe it was something we questioned. Like, they didn't do much this offseason. They added Otto Porter Jr. who's not even playing. But if you think about the Nets right now, chaos. Like, what's going on there? You have the upper hand. It's like, you know what your roster brings. There's that meshing. There's that gelling. Like, the Nets, I don't think, have that right now, to say the least.
It's a different sort of continuity in that it probably should have changed and didn't change. But you're right. All those Rico Hines runs, playing together in the summer, working out, all this mm-hmm. stuff that is part of the Raptors culture. Culture might carry them through this first couple weeks of the season.
And you never know. If you go on a good run in the first 2 weeks.
And then you can start picking off some lesser competition, and all of a sudden, we're
all
at 50 wins.
You're hitting your over on
all
the wins.
All of a sudden, we're having our 47 wins is the target here.
And you're hitting over 190 points for Malachi Flynn.
Yeah.
When will we see Malachi Flynn tonight? We saw zero Malachi Flynn
probably
minutes.
Probably not, no.
Zero of them last game.
Because,
not even one.
Because Fred probably has a pretty...
Oh, you think
sizable
they might,
responsibility.
You think they might play Fred a lot tonight?
Delano, as we know, is the first off. Malachi's going to get his run, though. He's going to get his burn. Just not against good teams.
All right. Christian McCaffrey. Whoa. Last night, a little bombshell. I know we're going to talk about that with Charles Davis, just teeing that one up. He's headed to the Niners.
Bit surprising.
Yeah, didn't know that one was coming. I thought my Bills were going to grab him. That sucks. We'll talk about that with Charles Davis. Five Blue Jays named Golden Glove final. Big day yesterday in sports. It was the sports equinox, in case you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
First, the 27th time in history that all major four sports played in the same night. So hopefully your...
Which frankly doesn't sound right.
Hopefully your eyes were all right with the blue light glasses consuming all that last night. But obviously lots to break down. But, man, that Christian McCaffrey move last night, awful lot of things switching around there. Lots of draft picks. But I think my first thought was he's going to be Kyle Shanahan's just, like, licking his chops this morning.
Yeah.
He's drooling at the opportunity to have him.
Giving Kyle Shanahan weapons is always very intriguing. But, like, I don't know. They've run through a lot of running backs.
I mean, it's Christian McCaffrey.
But it is Christian McCaffrey.
He's right. The best running back in the league.
Not anymore, though. Is he?
Top five.
We got to see it again. Like,
it's like, okay, he hasn't played. He hasn't put the time in the
We got to see
minutes.
It again. I mean, but if he is pretty close to the same old Christian McCaffrey, then of course he's going to be an absolute
He's going
weapon.
From the worst offensive team in the league to a capable one.
Yeah, and clearly teams could key in on him. Can't do the same. Well, Garoppolo's a little bit one note, but he'll be in a better spot. We'll just say that.
Kyle Shanahan's been known to find a way to produce or subpar talent.
He's a brilliant offensive mind.
So here we go.
He's made it work with Jimmy G.
Man, it kind of shows that they got a lot of faith in Jimmy G, too. Trey Lance is out.
That's
like,
a good point.
Let's go, Jimmy G.
Let's go all in.
Here's the keys to the car.
Let's go all in on our backup quarterback.
I love it. Is Jimmy G good or handsome? We're going to find out.
He's both.
Sometimes it's hard to tell. Let's do the A-list next. We saw a lot of the new reverse retro jerseys. We're going to run those down. And, I don't know. I'm feeling a little disappointed with what the Leafs put out, but there's some beautiful jerseys out there.
Are there?
Get your shopping, your wish list ready. Santa around the corner. A couple things you might want to add to your cart. I think there's some hits and there's some misses. We'll set that up next in the A-list Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ayler, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Happy Friday on The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 is a fan, Justin and Ailish. Sports equinox last night, but lost in the shuffle was the 45 articles written about ranking all 32 of the NHL reverse retro jerseys that were released. Honestly, if you type reverse retro jerseys online, any publication that has ever existed in the history of the internet wrote the same article about ranking all 32 of the jerseys. A lot of differing takes, which is great.
Several things I don't miss about my past life.
Is writing that.
But the responsibility to write about jerseys would be high up on that list.
Nothing gets the people going more than jerseys, though, Justin.
People get excited about it. Do I want to write about it? Do I want to break down threads?
Well, you're going to do it now.
I can do 2 minutes on the A-list.
On the A-list.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, immediate thoughts. Some teams went for it and hit it out of the park. The Florida Panthers, they did it.
The consensus number one?
The consensus number one in my thoughts. the beautiful baby blue jersey with the stick cross with the palm tree.
Yes. The best part is the logo. The logo to me.
I want that immediately.
Do you?
It's sick. And so, like, so different. You know, a lot of these teams went with, oh, we're going to do our same logo and we're going to jazz it up with a different background color. This is different. This is great. Very much like the Florida Panthers.
My number one is the San Jose Sharks.
You know, that was
golden seals,
close 1B
sharks instead
for
of
me.
Seals. It's just, it's a classic.
I've always loved
redesign.
That jersey.
It's very, very nice. I also like the Pittsburgh Penguins because it harkens back to, but it's like, it reminds me of Jager.
Yeah,
those
I
early
get it.
Years. And it's just like, it's actually, I like the logo. I like the old logo better, which is the one that's featured on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it might be more of a logo thing than anything. But if anything reminds me of Jaromir Jagr, those early years, the mullet, the jersey.
Mm-hmm. There's the nostalgia. So it's like, are you going for an immediate nostalgia factor? Are you going for something different that's going to sell like that? Florida Panthers jersey is going to sell because nobody's, like, that's just so off the radar.
Because it's different, yeah. Like, I mean, Pittsburgh's done versions of this before. So it's like, how new is it? But it's just in terms of, like, a beautiful hockey jersey, it's actually perfect.
Okay, a couple other ones. Boston Bruins went with a big bear on the front.
I like that one.
I thought
like
that
it?
Was cool.
Yep.
Detroit Red Wings, disgusting display of...
Brutal. First time ever that they've had a different color other than white and red.
Ugh. It looks awful.
Yeah, you should have kept it to white and red.
And then you look at that beside the Chicago Blackhawks, and somebody looked over in the test and cheated off the page because they're literally the same jersey.
Yeah, it's equally as bad.
Those two are bottom feeders for me. New York Rangers literally did the same jersey they did last year.
Yep.
Vegas Golden Knights did the...
Do you like it?
No.
I think it's the worst one.
It could be the worst one. And apparently the big factor is it glows in the dark.
Yeah, it's...
What? Who cares?
Who cares, dude?
Unless you're wearing this to the nightclub at the Aria in Vegas.
Hakkasan.
Then I don't care about that. LA Kings crushed it.
Always good.
Really love that jersey.
They just
jersey.
Have to put that crown on there and then they're laughing.
They crown themselves as one of the best jerseys. The Islanders went with the Fisherman Islander guy, which I thought was cool.
I feel like they did that exact same thing though.
But yeah, it feels like I've seen it before.
It's a nice jersey. It's a nice hokey jersey.
St. Louis Blues, though, with the music note, the colors. I'm a sucker for baby blue and yellow, clearly.
It looks like a...
You don't like this one?
No, I like it. It looks like a Winter Classic jersey, though.
Mm.
It looks like something that they pulled out of, like, a closet 75 years ago, and it holds up. That's a nice jersey.
The Calgary Flames with that little... What is that? Like, at the front?
Bad. So it's like Walmart knockoff.
That's so good. No, not even Walmart. Zellers.
Yeah, it's
that jersey's from Zellers.
An old Canadian department store trying to remake jerseys.
The Canucks went with the Johnny Canuck or whatever his name is.
Yep, Johnny Canuck. I like that one.
That's cool.
I like
that's
how the
different.
Number is on the shoulder.
Didn't love that part.
Okay.
The Maple Leafs go simple with a cleaner leaf. More retro. Last year, I hated the gray and blue ones. I think everybody was... unhappy with it. This is definitely better. I would rather this jersey than last year's.
It's like it's closer to the Matt Sundin era.
Mm-hmm.
They just give
go
us the
with
Matt
that.
Sundin era. Just literally
give us
recreate
that
jersey. I think that's the only way you're going to satisfy people.
Oilers with the...
I hate the Oilers one.
The Comet look. Gross.
Oil drop.
Other than that, like, they're all pretty decent. I felt bad for the people that work in the Seattle Kraken department who have to make a retro jersey for a team that is in its infancy.
Even then, they didn't do terribly.
It's not bad. I wish they put a squid on it, though.
The best out of all this, though, mm-hmm. is the return of the Cooperalls from the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go, too. They're going to, you know what? So they're going to wear the Cooperall pants, like, the you know, people know what that is, just for warm-ups, though.
Do they know what it is? I think you should.
The long pants.
It's basically like inline pants.
It's like, if you've seen a ringette game in your life, that's what ringette players wear.
Okay.
But it's obviously rooted in the Cooperall era of like long pants with a stripe down the side. Mm-hmm. Right now, the Philadelphia Flyers are red hot. They can't get much hotter than Cooperalls.
So the way you can't wear it in a game because apparently it's dangerous. They slide
what?
Too much.
Oh,
like
I didn't
there's
read
too
that.
It's, if it's like I guess a fresh sheet, there's too much slickness. Therefore, it's a danger.
Slickness.
So they're only going to wear it during warmups. But that is the best total look. But I get it. If it's like something like, Yeah, these guys didn't move at the same speed. The ice wasn't as pristine as it was as it is now. So I get, you know, it might be actually a danger, but it sounds like being a little bit too cautious. Like, they could rock them in a game if they wanted to.
But I feel like there would be, we couldn't get the stride wasn't as good. I felt slower out there. Wind resistance.
They seem kind of restrictive.
Yeah, it's like, much different than wearing pants and socks.
And back then, athletic wear wasn't what it was. The seams are a little bit, they're getting tested. Like, dress pants, they're you can't move the same way in dress pants.
What do you think of the Canadians with the powder blue?
I hate it.
Yeah, that surprised me. I mean, maybe it's an Expos connection.
Is it?
I looks like what?
So they went with the dark blue last time. Now they're light blue, and it's just like
I like that color.
I don't know. You're never gonna make that jersey look better than it normally does. Canadian jersey's perfect.
It's pretty elite. Text in 590-590, which you liked, which you didn't like. We got a text in about Mark and Hamilton saying the Capitals is the best. Powder blue is for baseball.
Capitals is not powder blue, isn't it? Isn't it like a dark blue with the
No, he was saying powder blue is for baseball.
Oh, okay.
He likes the Capitals jersey the best, which is the return of the Screaming Eagle.
But I feel like it was this. Didn't we get the Screaming Eagle last year, too?
I don't know. It's all blending into one, Justin.
Yes.
Will from Oshawa said, I wore Cooperalls for a year, and they were great if you like using the boards to stop.
What does that mean? You just like...
Well, yeah, you're just ripping into the boards.
Okay.
Have either of you worn a set of Cooperalls in a game? No. I was born in 1994. They didn't have those then.
No.
I wore Tacla pants. Remember those?
Tacla? Remember tacks?
No, Tacla pants.
You also wear Graphs, so I can't really take anything that you.
You don't remember
seriously.
Tacla pants? They had the cool little logo. It's like a pentagon on the leg. They were good. They were snug.
Might have to refresh my memory on the break.
Yeah, come on, Joey from Newmarket. How about Vegas glow in the dark? Is pretty cool. I don't know.
It's only cool for the warm up.
Yeah, they're gonna turn the lights off. And the guy's gonna rip around, and then they're gonna turn the lights on, and you're gonna forget
EDM music. It's gonna be great. They're gonna have a good opening. It fits, but it's just like. Here's the thing about glow-in-the-dark stuff. It doesn't look good when the lights are on. It's got that, cheap-looking
material. Yeah, it looks shiny.
Material. Yeah.
Last one here before we take a break and talk to our guy, Charles Davis. Tyler from Tottenham. National Predators fans hate their fan base with that logo.
It's, kind of scary, the Predator.
It's tough.
It's reminiscent of the Seattle Kraken mascot, who is terrifying.
Yeah,
I wish we could play that. But if it goes into the terrifying, if it takes that lane, if it decides it wants to be a menace like Gritty, it might have some success. But I thought it was a cute troll that you're trying.
But that troll is haunting.
It's a demon
me
troll.
For the rest
it's
of my life. Demon troll. Okay, let's take a break and talk to Charles Davis, who's going to be on the call for Jets Broncos this Sunday in Denver. Get his immediate takes on the massive trade last night. In the NFL. That's next with Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.